Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Indie Business Podcast. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. According to a report released last month by the Kauffman Foundation for Entrepreneurship, 340 out of every 100,000 adults launched a new business each month during 2010. This represents the highest level of new business launches in 15 years. Calling this a trend of, quote, jobless entrepreneurship, the report shares many interesting statistics about who is starting businesses in America today. I am so excited about this new data, but lurking beneath the numbers is an intriguing question. What are these new, quote, unquote, jobless entrepreneurs going to do to acquire the skills they need in a short period of time to make a business successful? With so many people answering the question, how do I start a business? I'm excited to be asking the question, should I start a business? And another person who's asking that question is our guest today. Her name is Carol Roth, and she is a graduate of the Wharton School of Business at the University of Pennsylvania, where she graduated magna cum laude. Her new book, The Entrepreneur Equation, Evaluating the Realities, Risks, and Rewards of Having Your Own Business, is hot off the presses, and we have the honor of having her to ourselves for the next 30 minutes. Carol, welcome to Indie Business Podcast.
Donna Maria, I am delighted to be here with you.
You know, Carol, there are so many small business books on the market today, and, you know, yours is so fantastic. Let's start out by telling our listeners what this one adds to the conversation. What makes it unique, Carol, and what qualifies you to share this great information in the book?
All right, well, maybe I'll start with what qualifies me. That will set up the framework here. So, first of all, I'm a tough love kind of gal. I may tell you that you're being foolish or silly, but then I'll give you a hug afterwards. And I do everything from really coming from a place of wanting everyone to succeed and be the best that they can be. Over the last 16 years, I have not only had my own business, but I have counseled literally thousands of entrepreneurs. I've helped companies raise over $1 billion in capital, done $750 million in mergers and acquisitions, probably read 1,000 business plans, of which I probably wrote over 100 of them. And so I really have a unique depth and breadth of experience that I bring to the table.
And Carol, let me ask you to pause for just a second and ask you if you can hear me clearly.
I can hear you just fine. Can you hear me?
You are breaking up quite a bit. Are you on a cell phone?
I am not. Let me see if I can switch over to a second line here. Is that better for you?
That's a little bit better, yes.
Okay.
Yes. So, yes, that is better. Let's go back to that question then. Tell us, Carol, your book is just out. What is so unique about the entrepreneur equation?
Well, I think it's unique, Donna Maria, because when I did my research out there, I looked at all the books, and so many of them said, follow these 7 steps to success. Here's the path for a successful business. And about a couple things. One is we all have very different definitions of what success means, and we all have different circumstances and goals and objectives. So how could one plan fit all of us when we have these different success definitions and different things going on in our lives? I just didn't fundamentally understand that. And then I also felt that the books were very rah-rah, you know, here's what you do to fulfill your dreams. But if you looked at the statistics, you had such a high failure rate and so many people struggling with businesses. I just felt the assumptions that were underlying the books really weren't addressing the root of the problem. And I'm one of those people that firmly believes if we're going to improve ourselves, we have to be able to be realistic and address those uncomfortable problems. If there's something that's an issue, figure out what it is. That's the only way we can get better. So the book really came out of that frustration and out of wanting to create this framework that would apply to anybody, no matter what your situation was and what your definition of success was. So I really took my background, the credibility of the 16 years and all the different entrepreneurs that I have seen both succeed and failed to succeed, and brought that together in one framework
Carol? Carol?
Yes, can you hear me?
You know, I can hear you, but it's a very, very bad connection for some reason. So I'm listening to the show live through another ear here, and I think what we're going to have to do is either ask you to call in from a different number, or I hate to do this, but we're going to have to postpone. The audio is just not coming through well at all.
Huh,
on the live show.
Let me try and dial back in here and see if perhaps it's just a one-off connection here.
Okay. What's the area code you're going to be dialing from?
847 again.
Okay. I'll look for that. I'm going to terminate this one. And when I start over, I'm going to start from scratch. We'll shorten the show. We'll only still go to 1:30, but then when we edit it, no one will be the wiser.
All right. Perfect. I will call you right back.
Okay. Bye-bye. With so many people answering the question, how do I start a business, I'm excited to be asking the question, should I start a business? And asking this question along with me is our guest on today's show. Her name is Carol Roth, and she is a graduate of the Wharton School of Business at the University of Pennsylvania, where she graduated magna cum laude. Her new book, The Entrepreneur Equation, Evaluating the Realities, Risks, and Rewards of Having Your Own Business, is hot off the presses, and we have the honor of having her to ourselves for the next 30 minutes. Carol, welcome to Indie Business Podcast.
Donna Maria, thank you so much for having me.
Now, Carol, you know, there are so many books out here on the market today about entrepreneurship, small business ownership, success, you know, and there's a lot of fantastic ones out there. Yours is an absolutely wonderful addition. Let's start off by telling our listeners, what is exceptional about this book? And tell us about your experience so we know how you're qualified to answer this entrepreneurial equation question.
Sure. Well, I think I'll start with the second half of that and talk a little bit about my background because I think it sets up the framework. I've spent the last 16 years advising businesses, literally have counseled over 1,000 entrepreneurs. And over that time, I have helped them raise over $1 billion in capital. I've done 750 million in mergers and acquisitions. I've probably written over 100 business plans. And from that, as well as having my own business, I bring a really unique breadth and depth of experience to the table. So it's very different sort of credible background than a lot of the folks who are writing business books in the small business and entrepreneurship space. So that really set me up to, you know, take a look at what I had learned both about the successes and the failures of all of the entrepreneurs that I had been working with and touching over the last 16 years. And it was interesting because as I did my research, I was out there and I saw all these books that said, you know, follow this 7-step plan to success. If you follow these easy steps, overnight you'll be a success. And I said, well, that's so strange to me because we have such different definitions of what success means to us. And we have different circumstances and different goals and different objectives. So how could this one plan really fit all of us? And then when I took it a step further and I looked at the statistics that the up to 90% of businesses failing to succeed within 5 years, I said, well, obviously the advice that is out there isn't cutting it, and maybe there are some wrong assumptions that are going on, or maybe just our landscape has changed so much in the last decade that we need a fresh perspective. So that's what I really did. I took this fresh perspective as well as my tough love philosophy. I'm not afraid to shine a light and tell you when you're being silly, but I will give you a hug afterwards. And I created this framework, the entrepreneur equation, so that it could be very specific to your own situation, that you could take it and you can layer it on top of what your definition of success is and what's going on in your life and the things that are very particular to you, so that you could evaluate a new business or your existing business on a very specific basis related to you.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And, you know, I so agree with you that there are no cookie cutters out here. And as any person who has achieved well in any walk of life will tell you, what you don't do is as important as what you do do. So in the interest of not being negative, but of being real and giving everyone a hug afterward, like you said, let's talk about how to know when it might not be a good time for you to start a business.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting thing. I think that everybody feels that if you have this business idea or this great opportunity, you have to jump on it right that second. And if it's a business that needs to be jumped on right that second, outside some really special groundbreaking technologies like shoes that can fly, most of the time your business should be able to endure over long periods of time. So if it's something that's going to go away in a year, then it's not really a business. It's a fad, and that pretty much tells you you shouldn't go into it. So it's okay for it to not be right for you right now and for you to do those things to stack the odds in your favor. And so I really think that it's critical that you not only look at who you are as a person, but you look at your mindset, the reason why you're going into business. You look at factors affecting timing, like your finances, like your level of experience, the responsibilities that you have in your life, and also at the specific opportunity. And you need to look at all of those things and say, okay, is this an opportunity where the rewards are going to greatly outweigh the risks? If not, what can I do to tweak this opportunity or to find a different opportunity where whatever it is that I'm going to be risking, I'm going to get a huge, huge payoff for that at the end of the day, because it makes no sense to risk something for a reward that's almost the same. And this is not just a quantitative reward, but also a qualitative reward, a quality of life. So it's not just about the money, but looking at all of those things, making sure that you have enough money to start the business, to operate it, and to live on, that you have enough experience, that you've put your network in place, that you really have spent the time to prepare. You know, Donna Maria, I always say if you fail to prepare, be prepared to fail. And I just think that so many people follow their emotions. They're so excited about this new idea. They're so intoxicated by the idea of entrepreneurship that they let emotions take over and they don't really do the things to plan and stack the odds in their favor.
It's so funny that you mentioned that emotion. I often speak of the passion pit.
I love that.
You can have, you know, your passion. And, you know, I'd just like to share that I've had two conversations with would-be business owners in the past month who have said to me, you know what, I took a look at the options, I took a look at what other people are doing in this field, and I decided that this is not the right time for me to commit to doing all those things. And I just stood up and applauded both of them.
Yes.
Because they're doing exactly what you said, so many favors for themselves, saving them so much heartache that they might not otherwise, that they don't know about. They're just doing that for themselves. I just love that your book really dives into that without being negative, but really making sure that people know what they're getting themselves into.
It is. It's so critical, and I love how you say the passion pit, because I do think that passion is a critical component of being successful. That being said, there is no rule that says you have to earn a living from your greatest life's passion. And I always go back to my husband as an example. My husband loves more than anything watching the television show Dexter on television. So if he followed his greatest passion, I guess he should be a serial killer then. And so, you know, the logic there just doesn't flow. Or, you know, you have Imelda Marcos who should be running Zappos.com because she loves shoes. You don't have to earn a living from your greatest passion. You have to be passionate about the opportunity, but there's something that's okay about actually having time for yourself and being able to indulge in a hobby or a passion or a creative outlet that you are not dependent on for earning your living. I think that that's really okay, and I think that part of the zeitgeist out there is really pushing people to just look at whatever it is they like to do to find the business opportunity. But the reality is when you start a business, it's not just about doing what that thing is that you love. It's about running a business. And you actually will spend less time doing that one thing because you have to do marketing and networking and social media and managing employees if you have them and dealing with the banks and doing your accounting and all of these other things that are very, very separate from that thing that you love to do, that passion that drove you into the business.
Carol, I'm so glad you mentioned, too, social media, because today there are so many different media outlets that small business owners can and should be using that didn't exist just 72 months ago. And so that passion, as you say, it's such a good point. It will get you only so far, because when something new comes along that really will help propel your business, at some point you just may not have any options other than to explore that thing and see if it will work for you.
That is so true, and I was talking with, I believe it was Anita Campbell of Small Biz Trends the other day, and you know, she had mentioned the number of additional tasks that people have to do today just to maintain a business. It's so much more than, like you said, 72 months ago or 10 years ago. I mean, the fact that you have to be on top of all of these new tools in addition to everything else you need to do just means that it's that much harder and more complicated, so you have to factor that in, that those things take time. They take time to get up to speed on, and they take time to execute. And if it's not your time, it's somebody else's time that you need to pay for. And so that all has to go into figuring out how much you can earn at the end of the day and, you know, what kind of quality of life benefits. I mean, if you have to work an extra 4 hours every day because now you have to stay on top of all of these new tools, again, does this meet your needs? So if you went into business to have more free time and all of a sudden you're working 4 hours extra every day, that may not be a good fit. So you need to go back to the drawing board and reassess.
Really excellent, good points by Carol Roth, the author of The Entrepreneur Equation, Evaluating the Realities, Risks, and Rewards of Having Your Own Business. Now, Carol, we've been talking about the sort of maybe unintended consequences that can result sometimes when you have a business of your own. So let's talk for a second about the reality also that we're living in an economy, Carol, that's forcing a lot of people to think about small business ownership who just 12 short months ago would not have considered it and would have felt good about the fact that they weren't considering it because they love their job.
Yes.
Can we help people, Carol, who have never considered entrepreneurship, have been unemployed for 12 or more months, you know, they want to continue to look for a job, but really want to empower themselves in the meantime and see what other opportunities are out there. What advice or suggestions can you share with them today?
Oh, I have so many things to tell them, Donna Maria. Boy, this is this is going to be an hour conversation in and of itself, I think. I think the first thing I want to put out to people who are struggling finding a job is to say that you have to understand that if you're having a hard time wooing potential employers to hire you, you may also have a very difficult time wooing customers and clients to patronize your business. It's very similar, except for the
ouch.
I know it's tough, but it's true.
Mm-hmm.
And so you know, you have to really think about this in a realistic perspective. If it's hard for you to sell yourself, somebody that you know better, you know your product, you know what you do best better than anyone else, if you're having a hard time doing that, you know, how is that going to be different when you have to go out and market? Because the key component nowadays of business is marketing. There's so much in the marketplace. If nobody knows about your business, you're going to have a hard time doing that. And with a business, you have to do it over and over and over again. So I just want to put that framework out there for people to really kind of keep a lens on that. Now, I think the other thing that I tell people is that if you're really, really serious about going into business, then you have to let go of the ego and you have to be willing to take a couple of steps backwards sometimes to make a giant leap forward. And so if it's a point in your life where you say, look, you know, I'm feeling out of control here. I really want to explore something else. But, hey, I'm used to making X dollars a year, and, you know, I'm not going to settle for anything less than that. If you're going to start a business, you may want to settle for less than that, and you may want to settle for less than that and go and work in somebody else's business that may be at a lower pay rate and a lower job description than you're used to for the purposes of having a real life MBA, for having the purposes of evaluating a business opportunity on someone else's dime before you invest your own money in making it happen. So I think it's really critical that you need to be in that mindset that, okay, I'm going to put the ego aside here and realize I'm not necessarily holding out for the highest paying opportunity. I may take a lesser opportunity for the specific purposes of testing out this business and putting the magnifying glass on it and saying, is this something that I think that I could eventually start on my own? So I think that that is really critical as well, really keeping the lens on taking that step backwards. And then, you know, the other thing is that there's a little bit of a difference between making money as a bridge here to get by versus investing in a business for the long term. And certainly, I mean, if you're having financial struggles and you can do something, whether it's babysitting or car washing or dog walking or whatever it is, to make some money on the side to get you past this difficult time, you should absolutely do it. What I'm talking about here is really planning for the future, really coming up with a plan to invest and create this real bona fide business for the future. And so that's where you want to really put the thoughtful planning in front of it and behind it. And I think it's so important because you have to remember it's not just about how much money it takes to start a business, but you have to operate a business sometimes for a couple of years in order to get that foundation and to start being able to even pull any money out of it. And you have to be able to live in the meantime. So if you're, you know, if you're being motivated by this tough financial situation, I don't know that planning a long-term business strategy necessarily meets your objective either.
Excellent points. And we're going to be talking with you a little bit more about that. But I think we may have a caller. Is there a caller there? I thought I saw a caller coming in. That's okay. Carol, let me ask you your advice about this, and this may be a little bit of a strange question as well. You know, what I'm finding is that so many people who have been in business successfully for 5 or more years, they've been doing well in their niche, they've done everything right, they've begun to incorporate social media. One of the things that they're facing, Carol, at least as far as I see, is a lot of the people that you're describing who are coming into their niche really unprepared for what it takes to run a business, but they are sort of, what's the right word, diverting some attention from the businesses that have been around for a while, and there are a lot of, you know, flashy pomp and circumstance and all this stuff, and you can kind of tell a little bit that they're not going to be around for very long. But in the meantime, Carol, they can do a lot of damage, because one of the things they do is they underprice themselves because they're living off of a severance payment, or maybe their spouse has a job that's been paying all the bills. And so they enter these marketplaces. So I want to ask you this. How can an existing established business, what are some of your tips for that business to compete successfully, collaborate successfully with these people in their niche when this kind of thing is going on? That's kind of a, I don't mean that to be a mean-spirited question, but again, we're going to be real and then hug everyone.
And it's a brilliant insight. It's this, you know, bad competition is bad for your business. And ironically, I was watching Oprah's masterclass last night on the OWN Network, and she said something that just resonated with me about that if you want to win the race, you can't be distracted and looking back to see where the people are behind you, because you lose focus and then, you know, you lose your stride and then they catch up with you. And so I think the most important thing you can do, regardless if there are other people out there poisoning the well, which is very frustrating in every single niche, and I'm seeing this happen all over the place like you are, is that you need to be very, very focused on your customers, and you need to communicate with them constantly about value. Not price, but value. What you are bringing to the table that creates a benefit for them, that solves their need and their pain point, and why, you know, even if somebody else is charging less, that it may end up being more expensive for your customer because they're not getting the same high quality of service, that it may take extra hours to complete the same task or service that it is that you're being hired for, or that, you know, that you're just bringing something totally unique and special to the table. And so I think if you really focus on emphasizing that value and servicing your existing customers and really creating those connections with those customers, with those raving fans, that's the most important thing that you can do, and that, you know, hopefully over time these other bad competitors will sort of wash away, because, you know, they'll only have so much bandwidth in order to make a go at it. And if they're not providing value, if they're competing on price, they're never going to be able to do that. And, you know, frankly, you don't want the type of customers who are going for the lowest price option anyway. You want people who really value the, you know, unique things that you're bringing to the table. So you just, I think it's really important to stay focused on your customers, you know, what you're delivering to them, and your particular product or service.
And Carol, would you say too that one of a small business owner's strongest points now to their customers is their depth in the market, is the fact that they've been around for, it doesn't have to be a long time, but certainly enough time consistently to show that they're focused specifically on what it is that you've come to ask them for?
I definitely think that that's a point of differentiation. I mean, the fact that you have endured and that you will continue to be there for the customer, that you've proven that you have that track record, I think is important. However, I think you can't rest on that, because there are a lot of established, entrenched businesses that I think relied on the fact they've been around that eventually got put out of business, like people like Blockbuster Video that, you know, didn't see Netflix and Redbox coming and said, hey, well, we've been here, and just didn't move quickly enough to adapt. So I do think that you need to make sure that you understand what it is the customer wants and adapt to meet those needs. And if the marketplace is changing, be willing to shift and not just rest on experience. That being said, the fact that you have that experience and that long-term relationship, you should have a level of trust with the customers. And I think that that is probably the most important thing, one of the most valuable assets that doesn't show up on your balance sheet, but really is fantastic for established businesses.
Right, that goodwill, such an important part of your brand. And, you know, speaking of Redbox, I just have to say, for years, for most of my adult life, there has been a Blockbuster across the street from every grocery store I've ever shopped at. And so the Blockbuster management could throw a rock at every single Redbox that exists in the universe today. I just, you know, I look at that and I think, oh, my gosh, that just must be such frustration over that, as you just mentioned. But it's a great point to make. It's an asset, but it's not something that you can rest on. Okay, we only have a few minutes left. I'm almost afraid to ask this question because I had spinach for dinner yesterday with some people at my table. What is the spinach in your teeth philosophy from Carol Ross?
It sort of sits next to tough love. It's basically my philosophy that, hey, if you're sitting across from your friend and they're eating lunch and they get spinach stuck in their teeth, and you know how it makes you look really goofy, like you've lost a couple of teeth or whatnot, you'd be willing to tell them, hey, you've got spinach in your teeth. Sometimes it can be uncomfortable to say that, to point out something that's just this minor issue, but people are uncomfortable sometimes in saying these things, and it's to the other person's benefit. So whether you're the one who's saying it or you're looking for advice from someone, make sure that you're hanging out with people who will tell you that you have spinach in your teeth, because if not, it will not serve you well.
So important to get the truth. And this is good advice from Carol Ross, the author of The Entrepreneur Equation, Evaluating the Realities, Risks, and Rewards of Having Your Own Business. Fantastic book. I want you guys to know that you can pick up Carol's book and learn so much more about her. Read her blog at carolross.com. You can also follow her on Twitter at caroljsross on Twitter. Fantastic book. Fantastic tips from you today, Carol. If you want to tell our listeners any other places where they can go to check you out, we've got about 30 seconds.
Donna Maria, I think you've done a fantastic job. You know, the blog, the book, which just hit the New York Times bestseller list.
Woo-hoo!
And Twitter. So we're, you know, those are great places to connect. And I know we've had fun connecting on Twitter and look forward to dialoguing with everyone.
Yes. Congratulations, Carol, The Entrepreneur Equation. We'll see you next week right here on Indie Business Podcast. In the meantime, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.